podcast is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London, and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast will invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered the support group, and I've been an active member ever since. Hello, everyone. Today, I have a man who was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2017, so that's 6 years ago. Jonathan Grundy is about 56 years old, so quite young to have Parkinson's. He was born in Brussels and moved back to England only a few months later. He has a degree in French and Spanish. He loves the theatre and found joy in doing stage management and lighting at Winchester Theatre. He's also a good shot, having been in charge of the shooting club at school and university. And most importantly, he was in charge of the school junior common room, also known as the pub. After university, Jonathan went to work for a lighting consultant and learned a lot on site and on projects, both here in England and abroad. Later, in 1989, he went to Singapore as a design director for Corbett Design. This took him to other Asian countries such as Malaysia, throughout Southeast Asia and Australia, where he met his wife. He ended up in Hong Kong, but that office closed, so he set up his own company, working on all sorts of projects, including lighting in hotels, shopping centres, and the new Parliament building, temples, mosques, churches, and tube stations. Very sadly, in 2011, his wife died, and he has a son who now lives in Melbourne, Australia. Jonathan is part of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group, and he's on the committee, and he's done several research things within Parkinson's research, and he's very funny and interesting and loves a quiz. I am delighted that he has agreed to speak to me today about his life with Parkinson's. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you today?
Morning. I'm fine, thanks. Good. After that glowing introduction.
Did you like it? Let me start. Where were you first aware, and when were you first aware or suspicious that your body had a problem?
When I was in Singapore, it was probably around 2012, 2013, and I noticed that when I was in a meeting with somebody who was a little bit awkward or giving me a hard time for some ridiculous reason, I noticed that my left hand was shaking a bit, whether it was on the table or on my knee. And so I thought that was a bit strange. A few months after I first noticed that, I spoke to a fellow Englishman out in Singapore and asked him, because he couldn't even hold a cup without shaking. So he obviously had a major problem. But I asked him about it. He told me he had was essential tremor, which he'd actually had since he was a teenager. So there was absolutely no direct reason for it. He would shake away. If he took pills, then that would be fine. He'd stop shaking. But he had a problem in that he'd rather be down the pub, and that didn't necessarily go along with his pill taking. He told me that about his essential tremor, and the next time that I noticed it, that next time I was in a stroppy meeting with somebody.
Stroppy meeting? Then,
yeah. There are a few of them. Pig-headed people.
I've met a few.
But I then carried on over in Singapore for a few years longer. And I was really, became very much aware of the shape when I was leaving for London for good. So I packed up my cats, sent them on their way, packed up all the junk, all my furniture, all the necessary. And then just before I got the taxi to the plane, a couple of friends who were helping me both noticed that I was shaking like a leaf on the left-hand side. And I put that totally under stress because it was a bit of a nightmare situation. Anyway, I got back to England and everything seemed to be a bit better. I wasn't trembling quite as much. So that was in 2015. However, a few weeks later, it was sort of back with a vengeance, really. My brother was on my back in the nicest possible way to find out what was going on. Stress was still like a factor in it. But I went to the local GP, who fortunately is pretty clued up on Parkinson's. And so she immediately just made me walk down the corridor and noticed that I had one left. One hand was not swinging as I walked. This is a symptom that everybody finds, almost everybody finds. It's one of the more common symptoms of Parkinson's. So she then immediately sort of got me a meeting with the neurologist at Chelsea and Westminster, Angus Kennedy. And I went along to see him a little while later. He booked me in for both an MRI and a DAT scan. The MRI, I found out later, what he told me later, was basically to double check that I didn't have a tumour or anything else wrong in the brain. So I had my MRI, and that read all clear, no tumours or anything like that. And then the next thing was to do a so-called DAT scan, where you're injected with a radioactive substance that goes to your brain. It's a marker, basically. So they then give you a head scan, and you find out whether you've got a dopamine-producing brain or not. So the Angus Kennedy, Dr. Kennedy, got his results and got me to come in and see him. So I went along with my brother just as a second assistant, as it were. So if there was anything I forgot, he could probably remember it. And basically, I told him immediately that I'd got Parkinson's. So that sort of floored me a bit because I didn't know anything really about it, apart from what everybody sees on the telly, which is somebody with a shaky hand. I had no idea that there were umpteen different varieties of Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I basically was told, okay, the best thing now you know what the problem is to go along and see Parkinson's UK, because they've got a wealth of information on it, and then we'll work on that, get me some various drugs to take, and take it from there. So that's how I found out.
And once you got onto the drugs, and once you spoke with Parkinson's UK, how did you function? How long did it take you to get a handle on what was happening and what you needed to do to work your life in a different way?
Well, at the time, my life wasn't getting too much affected because it was basically a shaky hand. Mm. And also, my brother pointed out I looked like a bit of a miserable git when I came back to England, because facial expressions weren't showing up.
Yeah.
I never realised that things like a grumpy face was part of part of the charm of having Parkinson. Since then, I've actually looked at photos of my father, who died in 2013, and looking at photos of him and thinking about various traits that he had. But the grumpy face was, I'd always put it down to being a bit of a grump, but in fact, it's quite a very regular thing. And also, I'd put down having a slightly shaky hand as having too much gin. So it's possible that there's some genetic hand-me-downs there. Yeah. But one of my first thing that I asked the neurologist was whether it was my fault that I had it, and also could it be passed on directly. So, because I had no clue about Parkinson's, there are a lot of potential reasons for having it, but nothing was obviously in my. I wasn't really to blame for anything. Okay. But there are things like, you know, drinking, or I don't smoke, never smoked, but sort of accidents and environment. A whole string of possible reasons for having it.
Yeah.
And so my thinking then was to go and find out as much as I could. Obviously, when you look at the internet, you need to you've got to really go along with your eyes open, because there's so much garbage. When you Google Parkinson, you get some very, very odd comments coming out. You'll die in a year or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good general view. Do not start Googling anything you've been told you've got. You must talk to your consultant. You must find out real facts from the medical profession and from other people who have it, because they've got experiences they can share with you, haven't they? But to just... Exactly. Look online and people say the weirdest, stupidest, most unhelpful things. And if you're prone to being negative and stuff, it's really bad news for you to do that. How now do you manage your condition? What specific difficulties do you have, and what solutions have you found?
Well, because it's just diagnosed as a tremor, left-handed resting tremor. So it's essentially, my left hand is the only thing that shakes around a great deal, left hand and left arm. And if I take the Madopar and Rapinrol, if I take the necessary drugs, then it tends to sort of stabilize itself. If I come up against I'm cycling along and the taxi driver cuts me up or starts yelling at me, and I find that my previously calm left hand turns into a sort of shaking mess.
I wanted to draw attention to the fact that I know that you are a very keen cyclist, so you're doing enormous amounts of exercises using your bicycle, but also that you're really good on your bicycle, which is fantastic, environmentally very 10 out of 10. And also that you started by saying about if you were particularly stressed, and it's quite clear that certainly you, and I expect everybody else, because the minute one feels stress, one isn't able to work at one's best. And I'm amazed you're able to ride a bicycle in London without, you know, really getting so upset that you can carry on, even if you didn't have Parkinson's. But I'm in much admiration that you do have Parkinson's and that you haven't been killed. This is brilliant. How do you...
Very optimistic looking at looking like.
You know, I don't mean that rudely. But so you have to really focus anyway when you're cycling in London. How do you do that? Do you not lose focus ever with your Parkinson's in particular, or you're just...
As far as cycling goes, I mean, I just do it the way that I've always done it, which, because I can drive and I'm fairly obedient, I get really fed up with these people on bicycles who would jump the red lights and that kind of thing, and delivery riders who'd go charging diagonally across an intersection.
I know.
It's really irritating, but because I don't want to start yelling and shouting at them. Just leave them to get run over if they're going to get run over.
I just
cycle as I always used to cycle.
In Singapore,
the people's road habits, road manners are non-existent because cars are very expensive there. Drivers reckon that cyclists are the lowest of the low. We used to get quite a hard time from them. They've finally decided that two wheels is pretty good now. Whereas when I first went there, one reason for not having things like cycle lanes, the Home Affairs Minister, who was a nasty piece of work, just said, it's too hot to cycle here. And so basically for the next umpteen years, until he was too old or voted out or something like that, everybody was just taking it for granted that, you know, cyclists were either old Chinese blokes or doing a delivery, or Indian construction workers who were cycling around. But as far as sporting or sort of cycling has been method for getting A to B, they weren't interested.
They were very dismissive. My point being that you used to cycle before you got Parkinson's. And I know, because I've experienced this with my husband as well, is that if either you've got this embedded form of exercise, as in you have been cycling for years before you got Parkinson's, therefore it's not so difficult for you to focus when you are cycling. It's not a new thing, which having Parkinson's would make it more difficult. But also when you have Parkinson's, if you, like everybody else, if you repeat an exercise often enough, it then becomes embedded. So it's actually fantastic for you that you were a cyclist before you got Parkinson's, so that you, it's one less thing for you to worry about. It's very natural for you to get on a bike. You're very aware of what's going on. And therefore it'd be less stressful than somebody who's taking to cycling new.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like having muscle memory.
That's the word.
You get used to looking behind you.
And
keeping an eye on in all directions at one time.
Yes. Which brings me to, do you experience any self-consciousness or problems facing the public? I mean, you've only got a resting, shaky hand. I mean, certainly when I see you, I notice a very smiley face. And I've met you several times. I don't see this completely expressionless face, which some people unfortunately have. Do you feel self-conscious in any way?
I've been having a bit of a rough time with my back for the last year and a half, and which is making me sort of stoop pretty much if I'm walking along.
Right.
And so apparently there's something called the Parkinson's stoop, but I've got to still look into that a bit further. But the thing is that if I take my bike to Victoria Station, park it there, and then walk through the station, I find that by the time I've got to the tube entrance, I'm sort of not bending double, but I'm definitely crouching over a bit. And I'm working on that with physio. So I've got a list of exercises to take. Because even when I was back, I think even as late as 2018 or something like that, I was running half marathon. So that was because in Singapore, I've managed to do about, I don't know, half a dozen marathons or something. It was quite fun. It was 30 degrees or so.
Well, I was going to say, if it's too hot to cycle in Singapore, what on earth is it like to do a marathon in Singapore? Well,
The best one started at midnight.
Oh, makes complete sense. Complete sense.
Yeah, very.
With blow dryers, fans along the way.
As far as getting on a tube goes, if I'm standing straightish, then I'm fine. Sometimes I'm stand there and it's shaking away, like the left hand's shaking away. If I've just had to, leg it, run for the train or anything like that. On the whole, I'm quite happy standing there. And if anyone's got a problem with it, then that's their problem, not my problem. Most of the time, I'm looking fine. But sometimes people do offer you a seat from time to time.
Do you accept that seat?
But it depends on if I've just got one stop to go, then I just say, no, it's okay, thanks very much. But, I'm fine. I've only got a stop to go. Otherwise, if I'm going sort of 10 stops, then I'm quite happy to take it. As long as it's not a pregnant lady who's giving it to you. It's her needs better than mine.
Pregnant ladies are usually quite strong, but I understand. I have a thing about people. Young men offer people seats on the train, or offer ladies, and I so wish these ladies would accept it, because I think it's so. If somebody offers you something, and for a young man to do that, it's not condescending. It's actually thoughtful and very nice, and I don't know if I sound old-fashioned, but I do wish these women would say thank you and take it nicely, instead of I don't need help, I don't, just take it nicely. It's nice that they thought to do it, because it doesn't happen that often.
I really appreciate it when people do offer.
What have you learned about yourself since you've had this diagnosis? So you've had 6 years, which is a reasonable amount of time to reflect on some things that are different now. How have you thought, I didn't realize I was quite so stubborn or so difficult, or I'm very easy, I'm very flexible? Have you noticed anything about how you are?
Well, I've always been stubborn, so there's no changes there.
Does that stubbornness make you positive about, right, I'm not having this, I'm going to ride my bike today, even though I don't feel that good? Does it have a positive effect, your stubbornness?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to follow the rules of Parkinson's, for example. I've not been sit there feeling sorry for myself. And I found that the majority of people who I've met up with who've also got Parkinson's, most people are pretty strong about it. Very few people complain about it. People are fed up with it, obviously, because it's affecting their life, whether it has to be micrographia, tiny handwriting. By meeting up with a lot of people who've got Parkinson's, I actually feel quite lucky so far in terms of how I'm actually affected. In the kitchen, I am a lot slower than I used to be, definitely. And I've got to be careful when I'm chopping tomatoes or something like that. The last thing I want to do is slice off a fingertip or two. I think once I can get this back sorted out, I'll be a much happier person. It's a very common thing. I mean, so many people have got back issues.
Yeah, it's so important to exercise. We say this all the time. And if you're having proper physio advice, then it's really good if you're having the advice to follow it. Yeah, because they know what they're doing. And it is good. I was always told to pretend that you had a string coming out of the top of your head, as if you're a ballerina or a ballet man, whatever they call them. And you look younger if you've got good posture, don't you? So you always...
Yeah, completely. That's why I get so fed up with that back. Because it's sort of... that has much more influence on my life than the tremor. I've taken part in quite a lot of research studies on anything ranging from vision to memory to hearing, the sort of bladder control, you name it. And I've had something like a ankle bracelet. Yeah, a bit like being under arrest.
Oh.
But that was meant to give me shocks of so many intervals and meant to stop me from
Really?
dying to go to the loo. So I didn't actually notice any difference. But I've taken part in research on how to predict Parkinson's, if one can predict it. I mean, in the last 5 years, I've probably had about 10 MRIs, 10 CAT scans, a couple more DAT scans, load of poking and prodding, lumbar punctures, all to so that they can take sort of ground zero and then see what happens in a year or two's time.
A, this is really brave of you to take part in these research projects. B, I know that Parkinson's UK and Cure Parkinson's is really wanting people to offer themselves to this. Mm. So well done you for taking part in. So, and also if you're having all that stuff done, you're actually for free getting good information about yourself, which you can then take back to your consultant, etc. Can I just go back to what you've learnt about yourself since having this? I know you're stubborn, but is there anything else that you've surprised yourself about, either good or bad?
Probably a bit more vulnerable in a way, in that you do have to watch out for what you're doing. You need to make sure that you're not going to sort of trip over on the stairs and stuff like that. I mean, I live on the top floor, well, my bedroom's on the top floor of a Pimlico terraced house. So you've got sort of four floors to go down. Every time if the Amazon man comes along, then you have to nip downstairs, but you've got to be very careful when you're doing it. The physical sort of vulnerability is something that I'm more aware of now. At the same time, I'm still pretty positive about that. And the doctor, my neurologist, was saying to me last time I met up with him that basically, when you do a check on me, if he runs his usual tests on me, he's quite happy at the progression. As happy as you can be, anyway. I mean, the fact that it's not going really rapidly downhill. But I think as everybody else is well aware, because nobody's got a cure for it. You just have to make the most of what you can do at the time.
I think that's a lovely way to end this, to make the most of what you have. And I always go on about being positive, but it's also being grateful for all the good stuff. And if you can think on the good stuff. And you're lovely, Jonathan. You're always so enthusiastic. And I know you do good quizzes and you ride around London. You're a wonderful example of positivity. And I thank you very, very much for sharing your experiences with us today.
Couldn't do it without you.
And thank you for listening. Do let me know who you'd like to hear from and the questions that are important to you. You can email me at plifecraft@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, goodbye and take good care of yourselves. In producing this podcast, I'd like to thank Richard Smart and Emma Brudzinski for the idea, our chairman John Amphlett, who always encourages an idea, Nick F. Grave for the original music, Mike Bailey and the team at EPLS Design for the graphics and sound editing. This is a production by Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group with permission from Parkinson's UK.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.